Good morning. This is the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Sarah Gustavus. Deportations in the United States are on the rise. About 400,000 people were deported from the U.S. last year. One of the changes in recent years has been an increased focus on collaboration between local law enforcement and Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE. Much of this is happening in local jails and during arrests by local police officers and sheriff's deputies. To talk about what this means in New Mexico, we have Robert Schilling, Chief of the New Mexico Police, with us by phone. Good morning, Chief.
Good morning.
And in the studio, Elsa Lopez, community organizer for Somos Un Pueblo Unido, a Santa Fe-based immigrants' rights organization. Good morning, Elsa.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
You can join us today for this conversation by calling 505-277-5866, 877-899-5866, or email callinshow@kunm.org. We'd like to hear, what do you think about local police working with immigration officers and what kind of enforcement you want to see in New Mexico? Chief Schilling, first, let's touch on immigration is federal laws. So why is this relationship between local police and immigration officers? Why does it exist?
Well, I think primarily more than anything is the duty and obligation of law enforcement everywhere, not only in New Mexico, but across the United States to enforce all laws in the country, including federal laws when they can assist and help enforce those federal laws that impact the safety and welfare of communities around the country. And I think that's at the crux of what law enforcement is looking at in a very general sense. In a very specific sense, local law enforcement, just like the federal agencies as they stand today, are struggling with resources, both manpower and money. So we have to be judicious in how we do things. And obviously in a large state like ours, there isn't an ICE office or an immigration and customs enforcement official in every town across the state. So it's relatively hit and miss, with the exception of some of the emerging technology from a cooperation standpoint that we're seeing now.
Secure Communities is one of those. It's a program that relies on using fingerprint data and other data upon arrest. How Secure Communities working for state police right now?
Well, it's not just for state police. The Department of Public Safety houses the state, what's called the State Identification Bureau. It's their central repository for arrest fingerprints for the state of New Mexico. And that repository is the conduit to the FBI repository in Washington, D.C. So every person arrested, their fingerprints are submitted to us and then by law forwarded to the FBI. What happens with Secure Communities is when someone is booked into a jail facility that has an APHIS machine or a live scan, what we call a live scan fingerprint machine, their fingerprints are electronically submitted to the FBI, which bounces those off of an IDENT database maintained by Customs. And that's how Secure Communities works. So it serves all the law enforcement in the state, not just state police. And it, the beauty of it is it takes away, it's biometrically based. It takes away in other words, the officer doesn't have to look at someone and try and make a judgment or a determination as to immigration status on anybody. And the reality of Secure Communities is, too, in visiting with ICE officials, is they're not looking for people that are just here illegally. When they get hits off of the IDET database off of one of our arrests, they're looking for someone that has been deported before, or what we typically call an aggravated felon deportee, someone who has committed a crime in the United States before and was deported for it in the past, and now they're illegally back in the country.
Let's stay on Secure Communities, but let's bring in Elsa Lopez from Somos Un Pueblo Unido. You guys, have, like other advocates, have been watching this program. There's a little bit of controversy around it. What are you looking for right now?
There is a lot of controversy, actually, in the immigrant community, and lots of confusion, too. One of the problems that we see is that this Secure Communities program puts the local law enforcement on the front lines of immigration enforcement law, and that's very controversial. Our community right now, it's fearful of law enforcement. We have been working for so long as immigrants' rights advocates to create a relationship and build trust among local law enforcement and the immigrant community so that we can all fight find a better public safety, fight for better public safety for all in New Mexico. And unfortunately, what we have seen in recent years is that people now are less likely to report crimes. So crimes go unreported, victims go unprotected, and it's very controversial. Not only secure communities, but there are actually other programs like the criminal alien program that is more common in New Mexico. The chief was talking about the Y-scan machines. Those are not available in every community at the state level, but they can certainly, what the criminal alien program does is they actually share information by either faxing or emailing booking records. And upon arrest, individuals get questioned about their immigration status by jailers. They don't know really immigrants. What we hear in the anecdotes that we have, it's immigrants normally are not aware of what's happening. They just simply answer the questions because that's the jailer, right? But then the person who is booking contacts immigration immediately and they put them on the phone and then they have a phone interview. And in none of the cases that we have seen, they have advice of rights. They don't know that they're talking to immigration. And so that's really problematic.
Chief Schilling, what are you looking at implementing the program and some of these concerns that Elsa's raising?
Well, with respect to the community at large, what I would offer is this. A secure community doesn't impact victims and witnesses. And in fact, we, law enforcement as a whole, makes a pretty concerted effort to ensure that everyone in our service area, regardless of immigration status, from a victim and witness standpoint, we're not inquiring about immigration status. And the secure communities component only kicks in when you are formally arrested and booked into a detention center on a criminal charge here in the state of New Mexico. I really must stress that from a immigration standpoint, with our communities that we serve, with victims and witnesses, we really make a concerted effort to encourage them to report crimes and to be active witnesses in their cases. With respect to asking immigration status of someone arrested, law enforcement finds itself between a rock and a hard spot because we have very stringent policy in the state police. Upon the arrest of a foreign national, some countries require a consular notification, and the country of Mexico doesn't require us to notify the consulate, but it does require us to notify the arrestee that he or she has the right to have their consulate contacted. So if we're not making an inquiry into the immigration status of the person arrested, then we're missing the boat on the consular side of the equation as well. So, I offer that as kind of a counter to some of that, in that we're trying to do the right thing out there.
What about that question of people associating local police with ICE, with immigration officials? Are you doing anything to go out and reach out to people and explain these differences?
Well, I'm a state head of a state policing agency, so our policing model, we serve largely rural New Mexico where there isn't police departments or very large sheriff's offices, so we don't have a whole lot of interaction with that respect, what we try and impart in the interactions that we do have is, again, we have our own stringent policy in how we interact with immigrant communities and also with arrestees and their rights under consulate rights or, of course, their rights in the United States. We continue to try and reach out to those communities. We have officers and supervisors all over the state that are active participants in community organizations and reaching out to them. Northern New Mexico is a real concern for us, the Espanola Valley, and some of the crime problems we're having up there, and we're really making a concerted effort to reach out to the immigrant communities and get them to step forward with some of their issues.
All right, let's take some calls. We have calls lined up. First, Glenn from Jemez Springs. Glenn, what's your comment or question today?
Good morning. Yes, I personally have had quite a amazing experience with immigration in this country back in 1988, and I do not believe that some of the bias has changed. My adopted Salvadoran daughter went to Social Security recently and had lost her card, and to get a new card, the woman responding to her said, "Oh, you were born in El Salvador. We can't do anything with you unless you bring your citizenship paper." So I said to my daughter, "You really need to put that in a safe box in a bank. If you travel outside of New Mexico, you best take your U.S. passport with you and guard it with your life." In relative to what I personally went through, a 9-count felony count, sitting in the courts here for 3 weeks, there is going to be a talk about that on the 15th of this month. And if anybody wants information on that, they can email me at glennsamert@yahoo.com. And thank you for this program.
Okay. Next, let's hear from Javier in Albuquerque. What's your comment or question today?
Hi. Good morning to everybody. Thanks for taking my call. You know, I work with a lot of immigrant communities, mostly here in Albuquerque. And I understand sort of the underlying purpose of secure communities. The problem is that sometimes that rhetoric doesn't match the record, if you will. And we have seen cases where the wrong people are being deported by the wrong people. I mean, people who haven't committed a crime, people who haven't been, unfortunately convicted in the court of law. They may have been arrested, but their name is later cleared, yet they've been deported. This is especially true with young people who were brought here when they were children, and they're being, they happen to be 19 years old. They happen to get arrested. They get deported to a place like Juarez, for example, where they don't even have any family, or a place to which they've never been. And I think that's a dangerous precedent, and that that instills fear in communities. Enough fear to where people stop reporting crime, where people stop trusting police. The other point, real quick, is that because of this anti-immigrant sentiment that's been spreading throughout the country over the last few years, probably rooted in the economic crisis, we have seen more and more local police departments, including ours here in Albuquerque, taking these very proactive steps to try and enforce immigration law. At the same time, what's happening is that we have a lot of rogue officers out there. We've had several cases, highly publicized cases here in Albuquerque, of people getting pulled over for, going 5 miles over the speed limit. And because they have a particular type of sticker on their truck or because they speak English with a heavy accent, the police officer then inquires as to immigration status. And sometimes people don't know any better. People will be scared and sort of divulge that fact. So I think, with all due respect to the chief, and I'm glad that he's there to answer some of our questions, we need to be real careful when it comes to trying to enforce federal immigration law and what that does to our local communities. Thank you.
We also have a counterpoint to that we got via email at collinshow@kunm.org. Rafael in Albuquerque saying, that both sides are maybe a little bit misled, that there are laws to be enforced, and why not by local police? Is not their function to enforce laws? Why are we looking the other way? Elsa, can you talk about the need to enforce laws?
Certainly. Well, one of the things that I like to mention is that entering the country without the proper, without checking in, basically, is not a crime. Being in the country without proper documentation is not a crime. Entering the country without inspection is a misdemeanor. And 55% of immigrants who are here undocumented, they are without documents, that they didn't come in without documents. So, and 45% of immigrants who came in with a visa, and they overstayed their visa. So they're not even guilty of that. So it's a very dangerous road, because what secure communities was intended for is to target high-risk criminals. And we understand that our police agencies all over New Mexico are already spread thin. And then now we're expecting them to understand immigration law. Not only is it costing on our taxpayers, not only is it a burden on our taxpayers' dollars and our tax base, but it's also sort of, it's contradictory to what we're trying to do. So we're all trying to improve public safety. And I agree with the chief. There's been great improvements in local communities. And we have worked side by side with local law enforcement, including the state police, in passing a bill at the state legislature that includes a protected class of national origin and language. And that was a great effort. But unfortunately, what transpires on the field, what immigrants are feeling right now, is because their family member was arrested by a local police officer, being a city police, a sheriff, or a state law enforcement. Then they were put in jail, and then the whole thing happens in jail, and they get deported. That's why I'm saying that the ones on the front line are state local enforcement. And so that really creates a contradictory message. If we want to, I understand we want to control criminal activity, and we all want better public safety for all in New Mexico, but we have to be very, very careful in how this works. We have had people with minor offenses, such as driving without a license, that immediately upon booking, people tried to bail them out, and they had already spoken with ICE, and they had what they call an ICE hold, an immigration. It's basically a detainer that lends jurisdiction after the release date of the individual. It basically transfers jurisdiction from the local jail to ICE. And so what that does, it creates a lot of confusion. What we have seen at the state level is that the request in the ICE for in the ICE hold, in the detainer, is that people should be held up to 48 hours. And what we have seen is people being held for more than 48 hours. I mean, when we started working in Santa Fe on this issue, our family members were calling our office and saying, my family member, my father, my husband, my mother have been in jail for 3 months after the release date. The judge told them that they could be released, but they're still sitting in jail. And it was because they had an ICE hold, but there was no mechanism of, there was still a lot of misinformation, no mechanism of informing ICE that this person had been released. And so meanwhile, we're paying for every day that they're staying in jail. We are paying tax dollars are being used to basically subsidize a government program that was initially created to target high-risk criminals, but now is being used to funnel undocumented immigrants with no criminal record. The example is here in Albuquerque, one of the communities that is part of ESCOM, of Secure Communities. In 2009, out of the 252 individuals that were deported, 78% had no criminal record or had no violent conviction, or they didn't have an aggravated conviction, like the chief explained. And so that's concerning to us, because in the end, we're not only creating mistrust between local law enforcement and our immigrant community, but we're also misusing our tax dollars.
Chief Schilling, do you want to make a comment on how much it costs law enforcement in the state to be a part of this program, if there is any cost?
Certainly. And I'd also like to address a couple issues just for point of clarity so everyone understands how the system works. And, you know, the caller from Albuquerque, you know, one of the first things I wanted to address is bias-based policing. And every robust agency in the state has policy against bias-based policing, and quite frankly, it's against the law and contrary to the law. With respect to Secure Communities and how it works is, when someone's fingerprints are submitted upon arrest, local law enforcement is not making the decision whether or not someone should be detained on an immigration hold. We don't have the expertise, the training, or the federal statutory authority to do that. The response that comes back from the IDEN database goes directly to the local ICE office, and they're the ones making that determination. So I wanted to be sure that the public and everyone understood that as well, that the local agency is not making an immigration determination themselves. And lastly, you know, the immigration hold issue, I hear stories as well about immigration holds being placed on people for what seems like minor violations. What we don't have access to, and what I don't want to do, is speak on behalf of ICE, because they may have information that is not publicly available as to why they placed a hold on that individual. As far as cost, I think the good points were made from from a taxpayer standpoint. At the same time, there's agreements between a lot of detention centers and ICE that once they place an immigration hold and the state no longer has charges pending against an individual, ICE reimburses local detention centers for the cost of housing those individuals. Could I give you solid numbers? No. I think that's probably something for future discussion and maybe something for folks to look at.
We'll come back to that. First, I'd like to take some calls right now. Mike from Albuquerque, what's your comment or question today?
Yeah, I mean, we have to look at this from a political perspective. Many of us out in the community worked. Many Hispanics worked to get Obama elected, and this is frankly how he pays us all back. And the safe cities things, this is kind of the first I hear of it, but the numbers tell that what the real objective is. The objective is to deport as many poor people as possible. And I mean, you probably can find something like Correction Corporations of America behind it because they make money off this deal and other people like this, but you know, I just have to tell you how deeply disappointed I am and how embarrassed I am that I had worked for and supported Obama. And this is, again, how he repays us. I mean, it's in my opinion, racist to the core. So I'll get off the phone. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mike. Next, we have a caller who speaks Spanish, and Elsa's going to translate for him. Ray, hello.
Hola. Hello. Buenos días.
Buenos días.
Buenos días, Rey. Si puedes hacer la pregunta, por favor, y yo voy a interpretar.
Ok. Mi pregunta es por qué la policía de aquí de Albuquerque está deteniendo a los estudiantes por profile, porque tenemos algunos casos documentados de que la policía los detiene por cualquier excusa y los está está hablando a migración para que se los deporte. Y el problema de los casos es que son estudiantes que no tienen ningún récord criminal y están en la escuela. Son estudiantes que demuestran que están estudiando y son buenas personas. Okay. Son inmigrantes, claro que sí, no tienen alguna estatus legal aquí, pero están desde que vinieron desde chiquitos, desde que tenían 4 años, y es muy duro que los estén deportando a México.
Déjame te hago una clarificación. ¿Los están deteniendo de la calle?
En la calle, cuando van a la escuela.
Okay. So what he's asking is, why is police arresting students who are going to school? What he has seen is a lot of pretextual arrest. People who are getting first of all, stopped by minor offenses or no offenses, and then they're getting detained from the street, basically. And the police calls immigration, and he has seen a couple of examples. And so he's asking why this is happening. This is probably a good question for the chief.
Yes, Chief Schilling, is there a policy on that?
You know, I believe I caught early on he was referencing the Albuquerque metro area, and I would be remiss to speak on behalf of APD or Bernalillo County Sheriffs and what their policies are. You know, every case is dynamic, and to paint with a broad brush that things are pretextual or for minor infractions, you know, I don't know if that's the case. One of our primary duties in law enforcement is traffic enforcement, and while people may think they're minor infractions, nonetheless they're a violation of the law, and they allow police to interact with the driver of the car and take enforcement action.
Chief, now, can we pause just a moment so she can translate that, and then we'll keep going?
Sure.
Lo que está diciendo es que él está un poco, no quiere en realidad comentar sobre esto que pasa en Albuquerque porque no está enforzando las leyes de Albuquerque. ¿Tú dices que esto pasa con la policía de Albuquerque o el chief es la policía del estado?
Es que lo que está pasando es que están trabajando juntos.
¿Pero quiénes? ¿Qué policía?
Que el sistema ese que de comunidades seguras o algo así. Ajá. Pero realmente lo que está pasando es que ellos están violando los derechos civiles de estos jóvenes porque no son criminales. O sea, yo tengo entendido que es para sacar criminales de aquí del país, pero están sacando estudiantes. ¿Cómo está eso? Y hay pruebas de que son estudiantes y no son criminales. Entonces, ¿cómo puede tener un récord ¿O cómo puedes saber realmente si sus oficiales están haciendo el trabajo correcto?
Lo que dice el jefe de policía, el jefe estatal de policía, es que él, su trabajo es enforzar las leyes de tránsito también, ¿no? Entonces las leyes de tránsito, si se violan, pues obviamente es un cargo, algo serio. Pero what Ray is saying now is, so why are we deporting people with minor criminal records? And so that's why I was talking about one of our concerns is that there is a really disconnect between the true goal that's why ESCOM, Secure Communities, and the Criminal Alien Program were created. There is a true disconnect between these programs, its stated goal, and its actual practice. And I understand, and we document a lot of immigrants' civil rights abuses, and we have seen it all. We have seen it all definitely in stories from people who were stopped because the chief is right, because they had a tail light that was broken, because they didn't turn in the signal, because they'd make a stop sign, and they get arrested. The problem is they get arrested because sometimes, and we have seen stories and we have heard stories where people were told, we're going to take you to jail because you're going to get deported from there. And so there is already, and I understand it's not every police officer, and I know that a lot of our police officers, our law enforcement, are really trying to ensure that everyone's public safety is better in New Mexico. But there are some rogue police officers, like the last caller, Javier, was talking about. And then I wanted to talk about ICE holds.
We need to take a break. We will get back to ICE holds in just a minute. This is the KUNM call-in show. You can call in today with your comments and questions. Do you think local police should be helping immigration officers identify people who are in the country illegally? Do you want to see even tougher enforcement on immigration in New Mexico? Call in at 277-5866 or outside of Albuquerque, 877-899-5866. The email is callinshow@kunm.org.
Support comes from Saggio's, homemade real Italian pizza, calzones, pasta, salads, and desserts, serving Albuquerque and the UNM community since 1968. Saggio's encourages support of public radio KUNM on Cornell Southeast across from UNM and at saggios.com.
KUNM programming is supported by the law firm of Rothstein, Donatelli, Hughes, Dahlstrom, Schoenberg, and Bienvenue, with offices in Santa Fe, Albuquerque, and Phoenix since 1976. For information, rothsteinlaw.com.
There's so much going on in the world. To keep up, join us for news and information. This is Robert Siegel, host of All Things Considered from NPR News. Each day, you'll hear straightforward, accurate accounts of events as they occur around the globe.
It's now been more than 30 hours since an explosion in a mine trapped 13 men underground.
The world spins. Your news shouldn't. If you're looking for factual reporting and thoughtful analysis without the hype, join us weekdays for All Things Considered from NPR News.
Weekdays at 5 on KUNM.
This is the KUNM Call-In Show. Good morning. I'm Sarah Gustavus. Today we're talking about collaborations between local law enforcement and immigration officials. We're going to take some callers now. We have Peter on the line from Albuquerque. Peter, what's your comment or question?
Yes, my name is Peter Simonson. I'm the executive director for the ACLU here in New Mexico. And this is an issue with the secure communities and the local enforcement of immigration laws. It's been a great concern to us over the last several years. You know, I think the Secure Communities program is really part and parcel of the same failed immigration policies that have led us to a situation where people are so concerned about immigration in this day and age. It creates an underclass of people in our communities who are constantly fearful, who, despite the chief's assurances, really can't go to police when they're victims or witnesses of crime, because they're afraid that any encounter with law enforcement is going to turn into some sort of scrutiny of their immigration status. And programs like Secure Communities reinforce the message that police are not there for immigrants in our communities to go for, even if they are in this country in the documented fashion, perfectly under the color of law, because they have to question whether or not that encounter is going to turn into scrutiny about their immigration status or that of a family member. What we found around the country around these kinds of programs is that they tend to lead law enforcement to begin to arrest people on the basis of race so that they can be filtered through the program of Secure Communities or another program, the Criminal Alien Program, which is very similar, to identify whether or not they are undocumented immigrants. There was a study that the Berkeley, University of California, the Berkeley branch, did in Irving, Texas, where they studied the racial, the demographics of people who were picked up by that law enforcement agency after they, before and after they implemented the CAP program, the criminal alien program, which is very similar to secure communities, and found that officers' arrest of Hispanics increased by over 200% once the program was actually implemented.
Peter,
and yes, go ahead.
We have a full load of callers today,
so
can we wrap it up?
Sorry. So so that would be our great concern, is that the program contributes, gives motivation to officers to begin to arrest on the basis of race, and not for the actual purpose of criminal law enforcement.
Thanks, Peter. Next, let's go to Nathan from Albuquerque. What's your comment or question today?
I think we're treating the immigration problem incorrectly, in the same way that we treat drug problems as an incarceration issue, which we're dealing with immigration inappropriately. I think we should be treating that as a documentation issue instead of getting people legal and getting them the rights that they're entitled to. For instance, if anyone is earning money and spending it, they're paying sales tax, and they ought to be entitled to New Mexico low-income tax credits. They ought to be able to pay in Social Security and expect benefits. They ought to be able to interact with police without being afraid of their immigration status.
All right. Maria from Santa Fe, what's your comment or question today?
I have a comment and I have a question. My name is Maria Cristina Lopez, and I'm the chair of the Immigration Committee of the City of Santa Fe. And we already have 12 years of experience of communication with our police department, and starting with Chief Denko, who was the chief of police in 1999, to our present chief of police, interim chief Rael, every chief has supported the policy that local police do local policing work and immigration does immigration work, and that no mixing up of those two, unless we're talking about a dangerous felon that happens to be an alien. Then they cooperate. And this has worked pretty well in Santa Fe. And with the idea that the immigrant community, we who live here, have lived here for a long time, and we're part of the community. We're New Mexicans. Yes, we may not have documents, but we contribute, as the person before me said, to the community, so that I say that Santa Fe is an example of cooperation with local police that leads to public safety. The question that I have, I thank you for having this show. It's very important. I'm glad that State Police Chief is on the line. But what happened to ICE? I had many questions to ask ICE.
I asked ICE to be on the program. They did not provide someone for the program today.
So that's the example of the lack of cooperation that ICE has with communities. They just come and they pull people. What they're doing in Santa Fe, have been doing for a while, and I'm sure in other communities, is they go to courts and sit there, and when people come in to pay tickets or to appear for a hearing and complying with our laws, they have arrested them for immigration.
Maria, do you have a question for the chief today?
The question is to the State Police Chief is, does he know how many jails are already set up with electronic equipment to take those fingerprints?
All right, Chief Schilling, do you know about how the programs like Secure Communities is being enforced in different communities and different counties around the state? Do you have a sense of that?
I do, in a very general sense. We do not have 100% deployment of live scan technology in the state of New Mexico. We're about 50% there. Some jails have the systems, but because of high turnover in jail systems, they have chosen to not use them, and that's an initiative of the department. the genesis of us getting 100% compliance with LiveScan is not secure communities, it's technology. We're in the 21st century. The electronic submission of fingerprints to the state only makes sense. So we're about halfway there. The other half of the jails around the state, mostly in the smaller, more rural jails, are still submitting what we call manual fingerprint cards to the state.
So what is LiveScan?
LiveScans are electronic fingerprint takers. Rather than using ink in a fingerprint card, you roll the individual's fingerprints upon arrest onto a computer, basically, and it submits the fingerprints to us here at the state electronically within a matter of seconds instead of days.
All right. Next, let's take a call from JJ in Albuquerque. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm right here.
What's your comment or question today?
Yeah, my question is are we speaking on illegal immigrants or illegal aliens who are here illegally, or are we speaking on immigrants who are here with documentation?
We're really speaking about both. There is a question of people who are arrested, and when they don't have a legal status to live here, they are put into the ICE system.
Okay.
Also,
let me comment on that.
So do you have a...
If somebody is here illegally, they're not necessarily entitled to anything, because our economic status right now as a country, we're suffering right now, and we're trying to rebuild from ground one. We can't rebuild from ground one if somebody's taken away from society, but they're not contributing the same. Now, on the other hand, if they're here illegally with their documentation and all that other good stuff, yeah, paying their taxes and, you know, contributing as a whole to the big picture of rebuilding the economy, then, yes, they're entitled to their rights. Yes, they're entitled to everything that we're supposed to have as American citizens. But if they're here illegally, then that's not necessarily an American citizen, because an American citizen has documentation, has a number, has a name, and is proud about where they're from. When you think about it, there's not the necessary, what is it? There's not a reach out to these people. We're not reaching out to them and telling, please come here illegally so that way you can do what you have to do and still go under the radar without paying your taxes.
JJ, thanks for your call. We also have Claudia, who has a perspective on this issue. Claudia, what's your comment or question today?
Good morning, Sarah. This is Claudia Medina. I'm the executive director of Enlace Comunitario, and we serve immigrant victims of domestic violence. And I want to comment on the impact of these kind of agreements between ICE and police on victims of domestic violence. It is widely documented that fear of being deported is a primary concern for immigrant victims, and is the number one barrier of seeking assistance from social services and law enforcement agencies. And since we have been seeing this fear in the victims, we realize that these kind of agreements have a chilling effect on the ability of victims to seek protection. So I want all of us to think about the importance of protecting victims and law enforcement doing their job of having to secure everyone in the community, regardless of their immigration status. With these kind of agreements, we are jeopardizing the lives of victims in New Mexico.
Let's also take a call from Sandra in Albuquerque. Sandra, what's your comment or question today?
Hi. I'm actually calling in with a comment. I really wanted to echo some of the comments of the caller previously. I think not only victims of domestic violence, but I think this is putting all of us in more danger, because victims of all kinds of violent crimes, domestic violence, rape, sexual assault, and anything else, are afraid to call law enforcement. Not only is that unfair to them and are they unprotected, but it's unfair to all of us who risk being affected by those criminals who aren't being reported. So I just want to say I strongly oppose this policy, and I think the unintended consequences are really grave. I think that the caller before who said, wasn't this supposed to be to get hard criminals in prisons, was absolutely correct. But as the intent that we've been hearing, but I don't think that's the real intent. This is just making our communities a lot less safe.
Thanks. All right. You can call, too, to join this conversation. The number 505-277-5866, 877-899-5866. Some questions we have today is, do you think local police should be helping immigration officers identify people who are in the country illegally? Do you want to see even tougher enforcement on immigration in New Mexico? We had a caller earlier who was saying that people who are here without documentation are breaking the law and should be punished for that. Elsa, what do you see in a question like that? Do you think... Do you have a thought on that?
Of course. First of all, I think thank you for his comment. Right, and this allows us to talk about some of the myths and misconceptions about our community. In fact, there was a study done by the Immigration Policy Center based in Washington D.C., where they actually found out that in New Mexico, undocumented immigrants paid $100 million during 2010 on income, property, and sales taxes. So we are part, as other callers have been saying, we are part of this community. We are paying taxes, we're buying homes, we're buying cars, we are renting homes, and we are driving, and we have also, like any other community, criminal history, and there is also problems with, we are victims of a crime, we're witnesses to a crime. So the idea of isolating an entire community doesn't really comply with the idea of protecting everyone in a community. And so I wanted to also speak to the fact that this doesn't just affect undocumented immigrants. We all live in mixed families. What we say mixed families, some people have legal status, some people are U.S. citizens, some people are in the process. And because we have such inaction of Congress, a lot of people have been waiting to legalize their status. If someone who is documented is fearful of the police because there is a family member who's undocumented, they're not going to contact the police. And then, we have talked about, obviously, this is prone to racial profiling. We have seen the examples. This is why in Santa Fe, actually, in about 3-4 years ago, the jail decided to stop collaboration through the jail, the criminal alien program. What happened there, we have been getting, I talked to you about some of the examples that we have seen, a lot of people that were arrested and kept in jail for more than 48 hours. Well, what was happening is what they don't say is that this also affects U.S. citizens. About 5% of the hits that the S-Secure community gets, and also identifying through a criminal alien program, are U.S. citizens. And people from Villanueva, New Mexico, with a Villanueva last name, and people with a Martinez last name from Española, were questioned by ICE in Santa Fe and were taken to the ICE detention center here in Albuquerque and were forced to hitchhike back to Santa Fe. And when they went and talked to the jail administrator, she was really concerned about the liability, because indeed, when there is a violation on civil rights and due process, the ones who are liable are not ICE, it's not the federal government, there are local jails. And that puts a lot of risk, and it's very onerous for our local counties who have to absorb that cost. We know that there is actually a lawsuit in Bernalillo, too, done by an immigration attorney of a person who was detained for six days more than the 48 hours that the ICE hold request. So it's certainly a concern to us. Also, people are not getting reimbursed, and I'd love to get back to that, because the chief said that everybody's getting reimbursed for when we are holding people, but the truth is that there is a formula, and not everybody qualifies to be reimbursable.
We need to take another break here. This is the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Sarah Gustavus. The topic today is collaboration between local law enforcement and ICE. We have Elsa Lopez from Somos Un Pueblo Unido. We also have Robert Schilling, chief of the New Mexico State Police, with us on the line, and some people have called in with questions for him. We'll get to those in just a moment. The number you can call, 505-277-5866, or email callinshow@kunm.org.
The Vortex Theater presents Willpower 2, the Summer Shakespeare Festival. It's Romeo and Juliet, The Comedy of Errors, and The Merchant of Venice playing in revolving repertory Friday, Saturday, and Sunday at 7:30 p.m. through August 7th in the air-conditioned Vortex Theater off Central on Buena Vista. Sunday matinees at 2 p.m. beginning June 12th. Info at vortexabq.org or call 247-8600. A message from the tax-exempt Vortex Theater.
Funding for the KUNM Call-In Show comes from the New Mexico Community Foundation, Growing Our Future Together, on the web at nmcf.org, and by the McCune Charitable Foundation.
All right, let's take a call from Olfi in Albuquerque. What's your question for Chief Schilling?
Hi, I've got a quick comment first and then a question for the chief. I'm an attorney here in Albuquerque. I do immigration law. And the comment is that the ICE detainers, there's questionable legal authority for them. But second, that places no obligation on the state authorities to detain somebody even for the 48 hours. Never mind the problems that we have beyond the 48 hours, but even for the 48 hours. In addition, the state does not get reimbursed for housing detainees for those 48 hours. So, Chief, why are we wasting taxpayers' money with these 48-hour detainers when there's no obligation on the state to do so? Why are we footing the bill? Thank you.
Chief Schilling.
Yes, sir. I'd be remiss in trying to comment on anything having to do with ICE, because the detainer issue is a federal action initiated by Immigration and Customs Enforcement, and we have no say in what they do. Adding to the complication of that and me trying to answer the question is each detention center around the state is administered either by and usually by the county, and how they choose to employ those detainers, how long they choose to hold someone based on one of those detainers is up to the jail and the jail administration at that point, not the arresting officer who may have initially booked that individual in on a DWI charge or a domestic violence charge or something like that. It's complete and totally out of our hands, which kind of takes me to, you know, one of the places I wanted to comment, going all the way back to the gentleman from the ACLU. You know, the rank and file out on the street performing the day-to-day job of law enforcement, this process of secure communities, they're not involved in it and intricately aware of how the process works. They're just doing their job. And, you know, our stance is when you base something on biometrics and let the federal agency that is the expert in immigration law and has the database to back it up make the decisions on whether or not to detain someone, we see that as a plus. We're taking away from the rank and file on the street the tough job of and, quite frankly, the inappropriateness of trying to make a judgment based on race, color, creed, the language that they speak, things like that. These decisions are made by ICE, and they're based on biometrics. They're not based on anything else but the fingerprints of the individual. And additionally, on some of ICE's comments, you know, I want to make sure that everyone's aware, too, at least with the New Mexico State Police, we're prohibited by policy and by law, executive order to be specific, from inquiring into the immigration status of a victim, witness, or anyone trying to even report a crime. And we take that very seriously. We monitor bias-based policing complaints, as do most major agencies. And, you know, we think we're doing a pretty good job in that realm. We have a lot of work to do in the immigrant community in getting them to report crimes and that fear factor there, because it is there, and we realize that. But we think we're definitely making strides forward.
There's definitely true to that. I think that we're making strides forward, and what is taking us back is actually an executive order that the governor signed in at the beginning of the year. And it's sort of contradictory to what you're saying, Chief, because when we read the executive order, it actually mandates that state police inquires about immigration status into any criminal suspect. And what we keep hearing on the public is that it only applies to those who are arrested. So there's definitely a lot of confusion about that. And then the other thing is on ICE holds under the State Criminal Alien Assistance Program reimbursement only reimburses for those who are criminal aliens, and those who are criminal aliens under Homeland Security are those who have two misdemeanors or one felony. And so if you're not reimbursable, the local governments are taxing the bill. They're basically paying, they're subsidizing the government's deportation program, and it's costing us a lot of money. That's why, in fact, San Miguel and Taos County have decided to selectively honor ICE holds and only hold those individuals who are reimbursable and who have serious crimes and who are arrested for serious crimes. There are other communities at the national level, like Santa Clara, California, who are actually doing this post-conviction, so that we're ensuring that only those who are convicted evicted. And there is a push against secure communities at the national level. There are states like Illinois, New York, Massachusetts who are actually saying no to secure communities.
Let's take some more calls. We have Ralph from Taos. What's your comment or question today?
Yes, thank you for allowing me to be on the program. I'd like to make the comment that if you think about the cost that hasn't been discussed, I'd like to widen the discussion. If you have a lot of people here with illegal status who are willing to take jobs at lower rates of pay, they are hurting the blue-collar workers that we have and the ability that they have to earn a legal living that they're entitled to as U.S. citizens. For their families, they're driving down wages, and there's that knock-on effect on the lower ends that makes it very tough on our blue-collar families. So actually, anybody who comes in contact with the police and is arrested, I think should properly have their immigration status examined. And it's, yes, they might be innocent because their parents brought them here when they were children, but they do not have legal status in this country. If they'd like to have legal status in this country, there are legal procedures that they can go through to earn that legal status. And I will be quiet now because I also wanted to point out that there's many of us that are listening that do speak Spanish. And the gentleman who called in who only spoke Spanish and had the translation pointed out that the students had no legal status in this country. And as parents know, teenagers will often say they were doing nothing when they get detained, but usually the other story, as the chief might acknowledge, there's more to the story. I'll be quiet.
Ralph, thank what you. Would you like to see different, done differently?
I think that there should be a pipeline for people who want to come to this country. And we have the H1N1 status. That's for, you know, high-skilled technical workers. But for people who are coming here to pick crops, I think there ought to be a special visa for them where they can come for, you know, 6 months or whatever the harvest schedule is and be able to work legally and also be protected because they're being abused by employers who are paying them below market wages because they can get away with it. These people can't complain. That's what I like to see different.
All right. Next, let's take a call from Rick in Albuquerque. What's your comment or question today?
Yeah, this is Ricky Gonzalez. I'm with the Brown Berets of New Mexico. I guess there's a great amount of concerns that I do have. One of them concerning law enforcement is not so much a question of how much local law enforcement, state-level law enforcement should intervene on federal immigration, but it's this, we get this notion that law enforcement has gotten increasingly aggressive across the whole spectrum in terms of profiling the poor and minorities. We've seen an overzealous police force, and I know Mr. Schillinger or Schilling can't speak to this, but APD being overzealous and trigger-happy pretty much, and I just see a presence in law enforcement that seems to have changed over the years. I'm not sure why that is. I'm not sure if that has to do with 9/11. I'm not sure if it has to do with the xenophobic attitude of some of the member the previous callers. You know, as far as accusing immigrants of driving wages down, I don't think that argument holds any water. A Mexican roofer can probably make something like $17, maybe even $20 an hour. That doesn't drive people's wages down. That's a very competitive wage in the New Mexico state. So that's the only concern I really wish to address, is the presence of law enforcement making itself more well-known, but in an intimidating way. You know, they're not really reaching to the community. They're making themselves an intimidating force. They're making themselves seem nefarious and sinister almost. And I'm illegal. I mean, my family lineage goes back to New Mexico for several hundreds of years. But I can only imagine how an immigrant of any kind may feel about this.
All right, Rick, we're at the end of the hour here. We're going to let Chief Schilling respond to that briefly. Chief Schilling, perceptions of law enforcement in the state right now?
You know, again, and I think the caller hit the nail on the head. I can't comment on behalf of APD or BCSO, but law enforcement in general, we're struggling with resources day in and day out. We have people dying on our highways needlessly. We have crime problems in our communities that need to be addressed, and those are at the forefront of our mind. I don't think there's a law enforcement agency in the state that has immigration at the forefront of their mission or their vision in their day-to-day activities. it goes without saying that the federal government is an important partner for law enforcement in the state of New Mexico. We're a border state. We have complicated border issues, and we do try and cooperate and keep all New Mexicans safe through that cooperation and collaboration.
All right, that's Chief Schilling, Robert Schilling with the New Mexico State Police. Also today we had Elsa Lopez, a community organizer for Somos Un Pueblo Unido, a Santa Fe-based nonprofit. I'm Sarah Gustavus. This is the KUNM Call-In Show. The podcast of today's program will be on our website, kunm.org. You can email us. I know we didn't get to all of the callers. Email in your comments and questions to callinshow@kunm.org. I also did a series this week on collaboration between local law enforcement and ICE and the history of immigration in New Mexico. You can check that out on our homepage. Thanks for joining us. Have a great day.